You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
I'm friends with the monster that's under my bed. Get along with the voices inside of my head.
8:54. We're going to do a little explaining now. Joining me from Montana is Rob Schwartz. Montana man to the rest of you, but he joins us now. He used to be a lieutenant colonel in the Marine Corps, so he was somebody at one point in his life. Now he's a rancher. Rob, first of all, good morning. How are you?
Great, Mac. How are you doing?
I'm all right. All right. I want to kind of walk people through, you know, when you put an operation that people saw on Friday night together. How does it get put together essentially? So let's start with targeting. Can you explain to people what a target board is? And so CENTCOM would have, you know, would have a section that had targets in Syria. And explain how a targeting board works.
Well, it's all intel based, obviously. So you'll get intel guys, you get ops guys. From all the units in the area, everybody that's involved, to include, you know, any soft type folks, are going to have representatives there. And then basically there's a tier system that, you know, individuals or infrastructure fall into. And obviously in the Syria case, it was infrastructure, not individuals. Mostly what we did was individual based. But the unit or units will nominate, you know, heck, in, well, we did infrastructure, too, in Afghanistan with the HME production facilities. We did some of that.
HME? And, HME as well?
Yeah. Homemade explosives.
Okay.
So
those are facilities. So you have people, you have facilities. So in Syria, they would have Russian units, they'd have Iranian units, they'd have Syrian, military units. We intend to encounter that in Helmand, but those would all be in the target mix as well, yes?
Well, they would be. There'd be strike or no strike,
right,
you know, type of deal. And I believe in last week's, strikes, they were definitely on the no strike list and would be considered collateral damage if they were in or around infrastructure that we were targeting. So the units put together their list of individuals or infrastructure, and they prioritize it. And then the intel guys will speak to those individual targets on what's their involvement, you know, how high they should end up on the list, and then the assuredness of all those facts. You know, was that individual, did he actually do all these things? Is he associated with these people? Is that valid? Can we prove it to make him a legitimate target?
Right.
And then at that point, the individual or the infrastructure, you know, same thing. There's got to be proof that, you know, they are producing HME there. There are chemical weapons at that facility. And then the intel guys are going to be the ones that give you that validity of target. And then once that's established, they go into a priority order.
Okay, we'll talk about that in a second. Go ahead and finish your thought.
After the priority order, you know, based on what operations, you know, the ops guys want to get done, that's going to be affected by the operation side of the house once the intel guys tell you the validity of that target and the assuredness of that target is exactly what the ops guys are saying it is.
Okay. So you have the intel guys painting a picture and presenting you with a list of targets based on validity that in terms of what they can prove. Here's how this thing sets up. Then the ops guys come in and say, all right, we're striking. Our goal in this case was to strike chemical weapons. Okay, so now, you know, now the spreadsheets get edited. All right, these are chemical weapons facilities and units as they lay down inside Syria. Next thing, so that happens.
And in that targeting board, it was obviously production that we were after, not delivery.
Right.
You know, so we were hitting the production facilities. And that's the operation side of the house is going to make that decision and say, you know, we are not going to hit, you know, planes, artillery pieces, whatever the delivery system's capabilities are. They said, we want to hit the production facility. So, okay, all those other targets that are delivery targets, they get put down, you know, tier three, tier four target. And at the top, you end up with your tier one targets being production facilities.
Got it. All right. Talk to me about collateral damage or bug splat. Talk to me about that assessment as now we have a refined list of targets, and then what we'll ultimately publish will be the target list. So let's just say we have a dozen sites that we're looking at that we can hit. Talk to us about collateral damage and that assessment.
Well, basically overlay of whatever weapon system we're using, you know, that just goes on the map. You know, it's a big bug splat looking thing depending on terrain, and that just goes on the map over the target, and whatever falls into that ring, you know, we've got to make the assessment and eventual decision on, okay, is it worth the risk of collateral damage? You know, is there a Russian unit, you know, in that circle? One, how close to the center of the circle are they? So your probability goes up the closer to the center of the circle they are. And then two, okay, if that collateral damage does happen, are we willing to live with the consequence of that?
Okay, so just so I can graphically portray this to people. So there's an image that goes up, here's the target. There's an overlay that goes over the target. With this target, our weaponeers recommend that we're going to hit it with this munition. With this munition, it's the bug splat is going to look like boom, and then the bug splat relative to the recommended munition goes over the top of that image. And so graphically, you can see this is where this is going to go if we strike it like this.
Yep, exactly. And then, you know, you start to pick apart things, other critical infrastructure, you know, are we willing to damage that? And that whole risk assessment of collateral damage at that point. You know, if there's a power facility that's going to knock out, you know, power or water production in the area, what's the probability of that getting affected by that munition? Has to be taken into account. And then the big head guys with the shiny stuff on their shoulders and civilians with blue ties make the call, okay, we're willing to accept that risk of shutting the lights out and water off in, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4 towns for a period of time.
Got it. So talk to me about, so when we look at collateral damage in this kind of a strike, you know, so you'll see things like orphanages. You'll see, because they do still have those in other parts of the world. You will see things, you know, like housing developments. And let me tell you, and the Syrians aren't stupid. You know, there's reasons that certain bases are located in certain areas, and that is to protect it from first primarily the Israelis. And then after that, I mean, we certainly would fall into that same group, somebody looking to strike a capability, but would be deterred from that because of its proximity to civilian neighborhoods and things like that. So that gets laid down, and then the target list gets further refined, yes?
Correct. And then, you know, if that production facility's got a hot hospitals are always a big one. They like to camp those things out near them.
Right.
And orphanages, because, you know, there's nothing better for their publicity than, you know, crying bloody kids, on the news at night after one of these things. So they nestle those things right up close, to them. And then again, you know, the decision get made, you know, okay, that target's off the list because of the collateral damage assessment. It's too high.
All right. The General Jack King, who's on Fox on a pretty regular basis, said that he thought that our response was weak. that Assad had made a deliberate decision after he could not get the rebels out of Ghouta, after the Russians had bombed the shit out of everything, to include the hospital, that he would use chemical weapons, assuming that the American response would be light. And he said, and the American response, in his words, was moderate, and they won't do anything else. And that was a calculated gamble that he took, and that the United States is intimidated by Russia, which is a second-rate power, but yet we don't want to confront Russia over Syria. I'm curious about your thoughts about that. When you look at it, what it looks to me is that we had certain imperatives in the strike, and that is one, not give them an IO victory, which would mean staying away from orphanages, any place there could be major collateral damage. That seeds the narrative to the Syrians, and so we did that. Two, it had to be big enough strike to destroy things. We did that. And it also had to shove it back in the Russians' court as the world looks at them saying, okay, where is this going? And what are you doing to A, end the suffering of the Syrian people, and B, you know, avoid a war between Iran and Israel inside Syria? Does that sound, because look, you know, Mattis, Dunford, those aren't stupid guys. Those are two of the smartest guys I've ever met in the United States military. So they don't do stupid things, but they're also conscious of the way this thing goes and exercising American power. I'm curious about your thoughts about all that.
Yeah, as far as being moderate strike, I agree. You know, we did not go after any of the delivery systems, and I didn't hear the general's interview, but when I looked at it, I was like, God, you know, one thing you've got to look at, okay, what was our political goal in this strike? Was it just to, you know, draw a line for the Russians, saying, okay, you know, we're not going to tolerate, you know, chemical weapons, but we're not going to go all in, you know, right. All our chips are not in the center, because we didn't go after, you know, air bases to hit airplanes, you know, military infrastructure for delivery. You know, so I think kind of politically we did not want to just take it all the way, you know, max it out. But then on the other hand, I kind of think, you know, you kind of get one shot at this thing, because before we launched those missiles, the Russians had not voiced their opinion or made comment to what their reaction would be. So now they have. So now there's a line in the sand for us, you know, that they put back on our, at our feet. So I kind of said we missed an opportunity to really, you know, make it not a moderate, but a pretty damn significant, strike. And then let the Russians talk. And at that point, you know, now we've got much more infrastructure and delivery off the table, and we don't have to follow up. Now if we follow up, we've got to deal with their words from this weekend. So that's kind of the way I look at it. It's hard to say when you're not sitting in those big round tables.
Right, and know that,
you know, listen to the people.
Right.
You know, talk about, okay, what is the intent of this strike? Is it just, okay, we're putting the red line in the sand and we want to feel out Russia? Or is it, no shit, we want to take away this capability for the next 25 years? You know,
well,
and that means
I'll
taking out every plane that can deliver it and artillery piece.
Right. The only thing, if you judge them and assume they're not stupid, you know, there's a looming war between Iran and Israel that's coming if something doesn't change. And so I think the United States has ceded under Barack Obama. We ceded a win to Russia and Iran in Syria. And then we enabled it when we unfroze all those Iranian assets. We gave them the money to do what they're doing in Yemen and in Syria. So, yeah. I mean, it all gets laid at our doorstep. So, in my opinion, we don't have a strategy in Syria. And what our strategy, in my opinion, ought to be is kind of an economy of force mission. We are not leaving northern Syria. Okay. It is going to be a sanctuary, but it also acts as a block on Iran's land bridge, and we want to encourage a political settlement in the balance of Syria. And when that's done, we will gladly leave. But here's the problem. Any kind of settlement in Syria involves the Sunni majority. And if the Sunni majority is involved in it, then what happens to Iran and what happens to Russia? They'll get their asses both booted out of there. So, yeah. So again, I think this action announces that I think we're not leaving. As leader of the free world, we don't see this in anybody's interest for there to be a major war between Israel and Iran in Syria. And again, if nothing changes, there will be. Sure as shit, there will be. And so to me, I think it is it's kind of an announcement for a couple purposes. One, stay away from the chemical weapons thing. We told you that a year ago, and we're not going to do what the Obama administration did and walk away from it. And two, we aren't going away. We're still interested, along with our allies, very much in this issue. And we're still here. So I think, and then it's like, okay, now Russia, what do you do? Syria, what do you do? And so I think it's a way of kind of moving back into the issue, looking at the larger issues in the region and kind of announcing yourself. So, but it was deliberately designed to be weak. Because if we wanted to do something else, it's not like we can't do it. So what is the argument that the Secretary of Defense would have made to have it be weak? And I think the answer is dump the charcoal in Moscow's lap. Make it big enough and then let them know that we're not going away and that we want this thing politically settled, but knowing that they're against a rock and hard place in terms of a political settlement. If there is a political settlement, Assad in some way, shape, or form is diminished or goes away, and Iran is diminished. And so I don't know how they do that. So anyway, that's my take on it. Anyway, your thoughts?
Yeah, no, and I think you're right there that it probably was just, hey, we're in the game. We're players. We're not sitting on the bench like we have been for the last almost, you know, decade or so. Letting you guys do what you want. We're here to play. We're here to stay. So maybe we ought to talk this out. Is the next step.
Yeah. Talk though screws up a whole lot of stuff. And again, yeah. And we're playing from a position of a weak hand because of the actions of the Obama administration. I will tell you what, regardless of what you think about him as a person, and he seems like a likable human being, the weak way that he led the nation and the free world, we're all paying for it now. In particular, the Israelis, you know, may pay for it because of the things that we did, leaving Iraq, leaving Afghanistan, having to go back into Iraq, Syria, because of that, the Arab Spring that began the civil war, us taking a side and then kind of backing out of it. I mean, we've been horrible in the region, and that has destabilized not only Turkey, a NATO ally, but Europe as well because of the refugee crisis. And we've got to get our shit together in conjunction with you know, other free Western, you know, nations and get back involved in Syria and get the fighting to stop and get a lid on it so hopefully we don't see a broader war.
Yeah.
But a lot of people just want to leave.
Yeah, and that's not going to help.
No. No, I mean, if we leave, just like we did when we left Iraq, if we leave, we'll go back. Trust me.
Yeah, it may not be this year, but it won't be too far off in the future.
All right. All right. I appreciate you explaining the whole targeting process and the way that shit works. Email. Hey, Mac, how about the infrastructure in the sky? How does that work? For a submarine and for ships, they have boxes that they would shoot out of. So they're assigned boxes based on range, and then they'll launch based on the time on target and time of flight, because everything was supposed to hit at one time, not knowing what the Russians would do in terms of what the Russians and the Iranians would do with their anti-air defenses. How do you weaponeer with the coalition? A lot of times their hardware is not as sophisticated as ours. It'll be really good. When we begin to hand out targets and who's going to strike what, do they get handed out their assignments first, and then we'll take whatever's left over, which might be more difficult things?
No. It depends on capability and what they've got in the area, especially with ships. And those range fans from those freaking ballistic missiles are insane. It's like just everybody out of the air of above this whole country. Everything just gets the hell out of the way. Ship sails to a specific spot in the ocean, and giant range fan goes down, and everybody just gets the hell out of the way. They're huge. I mean, they're just insanely large. But as far as who gets what target, it's capability based on who's got what in the region. And then also there's some of that, okay, you brought some toys, you get to play too, and here's a couple targets for you to hit, fill in the blank country.
But we need those countries on the list. And
we do. They've got to be on the list just political reasons.
Right. All right. All that makes sense. And then the tanking and the escort, that's all. We do that on a regular basis. So the air dudes, we kick that to the air dudes. They put in the aviation infrastructure, the times and whatnot, and then you have yourself an operation.
That covers a lot of ground.
That does. All right. Thanks for the visit. Good luck.
All right, man.
All right.
Yep.
There you have it.
See ya.
Rob Schwartz, Kaffin. We're gonna take 60 seconds. When we come back, Michael Musselman joins us next.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.